The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast. One of the host's favorite Texan of all time is Arian Foster. Adopt, don't shop. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. And I am joined, speaking of the Texans, by our wonderful Texans reporter, DJ Bien-Aimé. Hello, welcome to the podcast for the first time.
Thank you for having me. I've listened to it a bunch of times, all the time, so I'm glad to be on. Should be a lot of fun, especially as we go talk about the AFC South. I know you're a big Jags fan. Not fan, but believer.
Enthusiast.
I have some skepticism, but...
Oh, you know. Wow. Off the top rope, Jags fans are going to be... They're not the biggest fan base, but they're passionate. I do love them a lot. That'll be good. That'll be a good... Because we like it when a division doesn't have a clear favorite, or at least when not everybody involved believes it's a clear favorite. And I think, like, you know, we're going to get to, obviously, like, expectations for these teams. They're all in sort of different phases. Two starting rookie quarterbacks, which makes it really interesting, makes the preseason really interesting. And then I think with the Titans and the trade for Hopkins, I'm glad we waited until now to do the AFC South, because I really think that's a massive... Like, it's funny, like, DeAndre Hopkins, if he had joined a team like, I don't know, the Bills or something, it would be big, but it wouldn't be as important as it is for him, important to the team, rather. I think him joining the Titans does change expectations a bit for the season, and also tells us kind of how they view their own expectations this season. So, I enjoyed going through this division. I think... I still think the Jags are the favorite, spoiler alert, but I can say, honestly, I am excited to watch the Texans, and I cannot, it's been a minute, DJ, it has been a minute, because you started covering the team last year, I think, right?
Correct.
So, yeah, which was, I imagine, not the most exciting experience, but now it's really exciting, and I'm actually, part of the reason I'm really glad to have you on in particular is because I think with the Texans, because it's so much unknown, especially with the new coaching staff on both sides of the football, I actually feel like it's really important for me to talk to you, who's on the ground, who's seeing what the offense looks like, who's seeing what the defense looks like, who's seeing what all these rookies look like, because it's not like, I can't watch tape of C.J. Stroud and Bobby Slowick's offense. So let's start there. C.J. Stroud, Bobby Slowick's offense. What have you seen this summer? What are your expectations for what that offense will look like? It comes, of course, from San Francisco. And how has Stroud looked operating it?
Yeah, let's start with Stroud. I think early on, it wasn't looking too hot, in all honesty. You know, like, to start out, Davis Mills had like a very slight edge, but it wasn't like Davis was playing way above his skis. It was just like Davis was hitting his exact benchmark that he always hits. And it was just CJ having to adjust to the speed of the NFL, the speed of NFL defenses, and quite frankly, adjusting to the fact that he no longer has a Marvin Harrison Jr., Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, JSN. So like that was also an adjustment, and part of the fact that he was entering an offense where it's so, I know we say the cliche, you know, offense at timing base, but this one is very timing based. You have to throw a lot of passes, kind of, I don't want to use the word blindly, but have a lot of faith that your offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick, is setting you up to succeed, you know? So
San Francisco, that's the offense. Get the ball out on time. It's going to be there. You're going to get yards after the catch.
Exactly. So that took a little bit of adjustment, but starting since, I want to say, last Tuesday/Wednesday, he's looked really good. I can't lie. Like, once they, you know, fourth day of pads, I don't know what switched for him, but the ball is coming out a lot faster. He's pushing the ball down the field within the structure of the offense. You see all the arm talent. And the most important thing for me is he's getting the ball out on a majority of his throws under 3 seconds. Like, the Saturday practice, which was a night practice, he had 25 throws, 6 on 7 on 7, 19 throughout team, and about two of them where it took longer than 3 seconds. There's one play where I could see he's really starting to get it, where he ran play action, and there's a little bit, there was some pressure around him. Like, it was a muddy pocket. He stepped up, instead of trying to force the ball down the field, he threw it to his check down. And on top of that, you know, it was like live game situation where they were actually keeping track of you know, first down, second down, third down. So that was second and 10. He gets it down to Devin Singletary. Devin gets 8 yards. Now it's third and 2. He fires an out route to John Metchie. The drive is continuing. And you've seen that growth continue. And then today, Tuesday, he was making some dimes. There's one pass to John Metchie. I think it was a flood concept where, you know, you had the out route that was about 15 yards. And he threw it only where John Metchie could get it out over the outstretched arm of Desmond King. So you're starting to see a lot of the progression with CJ Stroud. And like now I have some legitimate confidence that he should not look like an abject disaster as a rookie.
I mean, he's got a beautiful arm. Like, he had a beautiful arm in college. This is, you know, my favorite quality of his as a prospect was his accuracy, the touch with which he throws with. So all that makes sense. But to me, if I'm a Texans fan, it's so encouraging to hear you say he's getting the ball out quickly, because that was actually what I was going to voice as, I think, my biggest question about Stroud in this offense, because so many of the things he did in college, you know, when he was drafted by the Texans, my first thought was like, okay, assuming this offense looks somewhat like it did in San Francisco, and we can talk a little bit more about that, it makes sense. He's accurate. He's a distributor. He's smart. Ball, he can throw over the middle of the field. One thing I remember, I pulled this up through the draft and I just brought it back. On designed rollouts, he had a QBR of 92 in college. And we know this offense asks quarterbacks to boot out and throw the ball. All of that, I was like, great. However, took a long time to throw the football in college. Nearly 3 seconds time to pass, which was, I think, pretty close to the top. Now, some of that is Ohio State's offense. You know, and I think that's something we've seen with quarterbacks coming from there over the last few years or so. But, you know, that's something I kind of wanted to see. Okay, like, you know, can he get the ball out quickly? Because that is an important part of running that offense well. So it's very good to hear that. I think I do want to, like, though, ask you, like, in terms of more specifics, like, how San Francisco-ish does it all look? Like, is he under center? Is it a zone running game? How much boot is there? And when I say San Francisco-ish, I'm really talking about, like 2001, 2020 San Francisco-ish, because the Niners offense has evolved into this own crazy thing. But like, how much does it remind you of watching, you know, the Kyle Shanahan offense of the last few years?
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of it, because you see a lot of play action boots. You see a lot of under center stuff. Like, you'll get some shotgun stuff, but you see a lot of motion. That's one thing that you've seen a lot. The Texans last year did not run motion that much at all. So that's been an a refreshing sight to see them actually, you know, use motion. You see a lot of zone. I mean, their bread and butter is going to be zone. They're not inside zone, outside zone. They're not going to run. I don't know how much power they're going to run or how many counters they're going to run, at least year one. But I know for a fact, like, their bread and butter. I've had a coach tell me, like, our bread and butter is going to be zone running schemes. And Damian Pierce has been a guy that has flashed a lot. And, I mean, obviously, you know, he had a really good rookie season last year. And I think it's only going to get better because, again, last year they weren't really – they're super predictable in terms of what they were doing offensively, and Damian Pierce was still able to thrive in that situation. So you've seen outside zone, you've seen some inside zone, you see some play action boot passes, you see even oddly, you've seen some read options. But I hope they throw that out the playbook, because like, that's not really CJ's bag in all honesty. But
it's the big question, yeah, right? Yeah, that people had about him. Yeah,
right. Like, you know, like, there's been some time where they've run it, but like, it hasn't really meticulate into anything. But you do see, you know, the boots, the outside zones. You see obviously some of the inside zones. You see some of the base staples of the Kyle Shanahan offense. You see a lot of dagger concepts. You'll see some flood concepts where CJ's really having to throw it blindly, you know, with blind faith that my guy is going to be where he needs to be.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I guess speaking of the guys, that's probably kind of the next part of this we have to talk about, which is, are they good enough? So just to remind non-Texans fans, because if you're not a Texans fan, you probably, chances are you might not know who's playing for the Texans now. Well, starting with the offensive line, because this is relevant. So, you know, they've invested a lot into this group. And I thought they've Laurie Tunsil, who's been one of the better left tackles in football. And then you move inside, Kenny Green, first round draft pick, struggled a bit last year. Was supposed to be David Questenberry. I believe he's out for the season. So yep. I have to think Juice Scruggs, who they drafted in the second round this year as a center, will start. The trade for Shaq Mason, who's at least a competent guard. Mm-hmm. And then Tytus Howard, who is a good tackle, but broke his hand and yep. might be out for a little bit. They did bring in, and this now looks very astute, they gave him a lot of money, George Fant as a swing tackle. So you've got an offensive line that I think certainly was better in pass protection than run blocking last year. But this isn't David Carr. They're not terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, even with those injuries, DJ starting there, like, I always go to Carr because it's the Texans, but like, I don't think, like, and he's the famous example of the quarterback who, you know, obviously just got completely obliterated
right.
early in his NFL career. I think this is fine. Like, for, you know, no one's going to confuse him with one of the better, like the top five offensive lines in the league, but I think they're certainly good enough to run this system. And then at receiver, you got Nico Collins, who's like kind of flashed being a number one, but he's been hurt. You bring in Robert Woods, John Mechie's back, which is amazing. Draft Tank Dell, super fast dude. And then you sign Dalton Schultz, which is actually a pretty big signing for them. Mm-hmm. And then you alluded to Damien Pierce. They also bring in Devin Singletary. So right. that's the gang.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Are they good enough?
So I think the O-line is more than good enough. I think, honestly, it could be viewed as a top 12 unit. I know Scott got hurt.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think Scott got hurt. Obviously, Scott got hurt earlier in the year. I mean, not you, earlier this week. He's out for the year, but Juice was going to eventually be the starter anyway because they traded up to get him in the second round. Shaq is a massive upgrade over AJ Cann along with, and just hoping that Kenyon Green can take another step forward in year two, because year one was rough from a pass blocking standpoint. Run blocking was okay, but even some of the analytics don't really favor it. He was more of a flash run blocker where he could like have a moment where he's driving a guy 5, 6, 7 yards down the field, and there's other plays where he's basically stuck in quicksand. So, you know, I think the O-line should be very good. And I think, Grant, you're right, George Fant, that was a great signing by them because we know he can play right tackle competently. Is he better than Tytus Howard? No. But he could play at a competent level. Tight end, Dalton Schultz looks really good. I think there's a world where he could be top two in targets for the Texans. I truly believe that based on what I've seen in camp. Now, the receivers, based on 2022 production, they rank towards the bottom in all categories going into 2023. They're like 28th in touchdowns, 28th in like receiving yards. So that's my biggest question. I think you hope Nico can take a big step. But my biggest concern with Nico is like he passes the eye test, right? Like he's everything you want, right?
He looks like a number one wide receiver.
He looks exactly like a number one, you know, but there's too many times throughout camp where he'll flash, making big time plays. He's like, oh, there you go. And then like, he'll go like a couple, two, three practices without even getting a catch during the team with the first team. And it's just like, if you're a number one, that can't happen. Like, for example, last year, Brandon Cooks, you know, he's number one, but he's like on that lower tier of number ones. But throughout camp last year, he was always making plays. There wasn't a single day where he went an entire day without a catch. So that's my kind of like, Robert Woods has flashed a little bit. Not a little bit. He's flashed a decent amount in terms of just from yards after the catch standpoint and just being a nice safety valve over the middle. So to answer your question, Tank's flashed a little bit over the middle too from the slot. But to answer your question, I think the interior, like the offensive line, the closer you get to the ball, the better it gets. The further away you get from the ball, the more questions arise. Hmm. So I think the offensive line, I top 12 unit. I think Dalton Schultz, based off his, you know, time in Dallas, he was top 10 in a plethora of categories in touchdowns, receiving yards, reception, top 10. So I think tight end is fine. Receiver, that's where it's like, you know, it's going to be some moments where we're like, he needs a guy.
Yeah, right. It's interesting because it's actually kind of not too dissimilar. I'm talking about the NFC South next week from Carolina, in that, like, I actually think like Carolina has a good offensive line, like kind of mid receiving group. Their players are a little bit different, and I'll obviously talk about them next week. But it's like, it's actually pretty unusual, I think, for the first two quarterbacks drafted to not end up to go to teams that have like decent pass protection, you know? And I would choose that over, like, I mean, I guess this was like the famous Chase versus Sewell debate for Joe Burrow. And obviously choosing Ja'Marr Chase worked out for Cincinnati and choosing Penei Sewell worked out for Detroit. But I think for these two quarterbacks to end up behind these two offensive lines, I can point to significantly worse situations, again, just from a pass protection standpoint, for guys who have been drafted near the top in recent years. And I think, there's enough in place with this receiving group, line, run game. I actually think Devin Singletary's kind of become underrated, honestly.
Right. Right.
There's enough there for this offense to look competent, Frank. That's kind of how I feel. I don't think they have like tremendous upside because of, like, you know, they're still missing some pieces. But I think there's enough for Stroud to. It feels like we're not going to watch him and be like, oh my God, he's drowning out there, and this is horrible, and he's getting sacked on every play, and these receivers are dropping, and it's awful. And it's like, it's enough. And it's also, I think a lot of them do make sense for the type of offense you talked about. A guy like Robert Woods, you know, who's not asked, he's not the number one wide receiver, but a guy who we know can block and you can use on the horizontal stuff and get yards after the catch. It makes sense for this offense. So we'll see. I mean, I think I might be more excited to watch the defense, frankly. Maybe that's just because there's players that I'm already kind of really pumped about. And I also just really like D'Amico Ryans. I think that we should start for the same sort of question for you, or I'm going to start with the same question for you, which is the what does it look like question. Because, you know, coming from a Lovie Smith defense, so obviously plays a ton to cover two. Actually, I think I pulled the numbers out of curiosity. I mean, it's the most in the league. Yeah. And they barely played man coverage, which they were not great when they did, but mm-hmm. They had their major holes. So you got D'Amico coming in. And I think what I find fascinating about this, DJ, is so, you know, when I talked about Bobby Slowick in San Francisco, I'm like, okay, does this look like the San Francisco offense? With D'Amico, it's interesting because so much of what he did in San Francisco was based on the fact that they have the best linebacker in the entire NFL and maybe possibly the last 10 years. Whereas the Texans are built really differently. Like, I really like the young players they have in the secondary, Jalen Petrie, Sting. I'm still excited about guys like Tavier. They even have good depth now. And then up front, I'm like, okay, Will Anderson, we're done with the draft talk. We're just talking about the player. Really good player. Jerry Hughes still doing it, man. You got Greenard coming back. They bring in Sheldon Rankins. So, like, I actually think the defensive line and the secondary, you've got some good players. So I guess my question for you is, how do you think this defense is going to look different, and how is Ryan's building it around the talent on his roster?
Yeah, so I think how much it's going to look vastly different, right? Because like last year, you know, third downs is the money downs, especially for cornerbacks, and they were in cover two on third and long, 41% of the time, which is most in the league by far. That's just an insane number. Like, I remember I had a corner tell me, like, bro, I ain't never played this much cover two in my life. But I see a scenario where, let's start with the secondary, because I'm so high on the secondary. Like, what I see at practice, I love that group. Because you mentioned Petrie, but like, he also has Jimmy Ward to help mold him on top of that and teach him exactly how D'Amico wants this defense to run. And then I've always been high on Stingley. Like, obviously coming into the draft of 2022, obviously I'm losing this debate right now, but I was like, I like Stingley over Sauce. Obviously Sauce had a phenomenal rookie year, losing that battle right now. But I think Stingley can take that massive leap because, again, he's going to be in a system that's going to use more quarters, which eventually, you know, most times, as long as, you know, if the number two runs deep down and the safety has to pick him up, you're a man. Yeah, and then obviously they're going to run a little bit more cover one. They're going to blitz a little bit more. So Stingley's going to have way more opportunities to make plays on the ball, and the ball's going to come out hot because, going back to that D-line, Will Anderson – Ubi. If he's not going against Laramie, if he's not going against Laramie Tunsil or Titus Howard, good luck to those tackles at practice. There's been times where, there was one play last week where Davis Mills threw a deep pass to Nico Collins. It was Xavier Hutchinson. And it was a big play. But if you watch the replay, Will Anderson was able to get into the backfield quick enough to where he was able to turn his back, walk away before Davis Mills threw the ball. That's how quick he got into the backfield off of play action. So I think Will Anderson is going to be as advertised. And then on top of that, you're going to have, Grenard coming off the edge. And you can use Jerry Hughes in that, third down situational pass rushing role, which he's more suited for. Because last year he started off hot, but he failed. He faded down the stretch. Because, he's older. He's an older player. And, it is what it is. It happens. So now he can be.
He's been doing it for a while.
But now he can be fresh and you can have that rotation because, against Salah in New York, D'Amico, they want to have a bunch of defensive linemen that can get after the passer. And they have guys like that now. Sheldon is a solid pass rusher. I like Malik Collins, especially in the run game. Because their pass defense actually last year was actually fine in terms of takeaways. They had more takeaways than touchdowns allowed through the air. It's just the rush defense was.
Yeah.
The six. Well, yeah.
That's what I was going to actually ask you about, because they finished actually last year 14th against the pass in DVOA, but 27th against the run. And when you break down like the different types of runs, the different levels, it's all bad. It's all bad.
Yeah.
It's not good. And I think that's the concern, because I do, like I said, really like a lot of the young players. I like obviously love D'Amico Ryans. But when I look at this roster, the depth chart, I'm like, okay, how much better can they be in run defense? Because, you bring in Denzel Perryman, who's a competent linebacker, and you alluded to the defensive tackles and stuff. But I think that would be my concern is like, okay, can they take a step forward in run defense? Because they were just awful against the run last year. And I think that would be the thing that keeps them from jumping into being, like an average defense, which I think they definitely can, but if they can't stop the run at all, that would be my one worry.
Yeah, so I think the addition of Denzel Perryman was brought in specifically for that type of role where he can help in that run game situation. Because last year it was bad. It was a combination of scheme along with bad eyes, because again, like they ran a lot of too high, and if you're going to run a lot of too high and still want to stop the run, your linebacker, your defensive line has to be extremely impactful, and your linebackers have to be able to have good eyes and be able to shed blocks basically at the same time, and they didn't have that. But this year, they're obviously running different schemes, so the linebackers won't be asked to, take on blocks as often. And on top of that, Christian Harris looks really good. I think he can be like a Dre Greenlaw type of player in this system. Obviously, I'm not going to say Fred Warner because, hello, that's Fred Warner. As you said, one of the best linebackers. I say the same thing, one of the best linebackers I've ever seen in my life. And then on the other end, you have Kirksey / Blake Cashman. Blake Cashman's have a really, really good camp from a pass defense standpoint. So I don't think the run defense is going to be nearly as bad because, again, one, it can only go up. They allowed the sixth most rushing yards in NFL history. But again, I think that they have more to do with scheme and a little bit of personnel. And now they have players that could start on other teams. That's another thing, like when you come to personnel, like they had a lot of guys up in a front seven that couldn't start on other teams, right? Like, they cut one linebacker, midway through the season that couldn't, get picked up by anywhere else. But he was starting and playing a lot for the Texans,
It's not great.
Exactly. So I think the run defense would be a lot better. I think the floor for them, in all honesty, from a defensive standpoint, is league average overall.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it, honestly. I think, to kind of put a wrap on it, my feeling about the Texans is success for this year is you want to feel like you picked the right quarterback. That matters more than anything. And then, Will Anderson being a stud. I think, this is not a playoff year. You never know, right? But that's not what success is. I think you want to just feel like directionally things are improving. You got the right coaching staff in place. Some of these young players, like you said, I loved everything you said about Derek Stingley Jr. I think you want to watch this year and be like, yes, number three. Okay, they changed the scheme. We're seeing the guy we saw in college. you know, so you just want to see like individual players ball out. And I think that a lot of that is just coaches putting them in the right position to succeed. I kind of feel the same way about the Colts. So let's talk about the Colts, because they're the other team that's probably starting a rookie quarterback. I think my parameters for success are similar, where it's like you want to feel like coaching staff is good, quarterback has promise, there's some young talent. So I think we probably have to start with Jonathan Taylor of it all. It is Tuesday, August 8th. At the the latest on Taylor is he's not there. His health status is kind of murky. It's all very fraught. I haven't really gotten into the this appears to have just been like really mishandled, honestly. Like the way the owner has been speaking about it, all of it just seems like disaster. And without knowing what Taylor's asking for, I'm always kind of reluctant to be like, the player's getting screwed. I don't know what he wants or what he's asking for. But purely from a football standpoint, it's kind of like, I believe like kind of conflicting things. Cause it's like, I understand why you wouldn't want to give him a big contract for the 200 million reasons we always talk about when we talk about this debate. I would also say Taylor himself, you know, coming off of a down year, had the one big year. So I could see some hesitation. However, it would really bum me out if he wasn't on this offense this year, because I think my vision for what it can look like with Anthony Richardson and sort of that copy paste power spread Eagles, you need a good running back next to him, and they don't have depth right now. I think Kareem Hunt just landed in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I just saw that. So they're certainly poking around. Let's just do the football stuff. Like, DJ, like, how do you feel about like this offense and how much they need Jonathan Taylor in the mix? And then I think optimistically, because I kind of do think he's going to play, what do you think it can look like with Taylor and Richardson next to each other?
Yeah, I think they're going to need not Richardson. They're going to need Jonathan Taylor to ease the transition for Anthony Richardson. Because again, like, Anthony Richardson has a lot of raw ability, but it's going to have to be developed and it's going to have to come together, and they're going to need him, period. Like, so like, I'm also on the side of, you know, I understand why people don't want to pay running backs, but they have the cap space to do it, and they can structure it in a way where they can get out of it by year three. Like most guys don't finish out their deals anyway. Yeah. So it's like, why not just take care of this guy to help your young quarterback? Most instances, I'd be like, I can see why not to, but you have the cap space and you have an extremely raw quarterback that's going to need all the help possible to, you know, help ease this transition from from Florida to the NFL. I will say, though, that with Anthony Richardson, he didn't have much NFL talent around him. Like, you know, just watching at Florida, like from the receivers to the running back. Yeah, it was bad.
This
like,
is not CJ Stroud going from playing with the all-star team in Ohio State.
Right.
Oh my God. My friend Danny Kelly cut a video of all the Florida wide receivers drops, and it's honestly like Keystone Cops. It's so funny. But
yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, sorry.
Yeah. No. So he's gonna upgrade that department in terms of weapons, but he's still an extremely raw quarterback. But I will say he does a lot of quarterback things well and within the pocket, from like just pocket movement and being able to still deliver accurate passes with a muddy pocket. Because everybody can make a good throw when the pocket's clean, things of that nature. But you've seen it when things get muddy around him, he can still deliver it with the velocity that's required to fit into tight windows. So the talent's through the roof. I think we're going to see a lot of a mix of like Josh Allen / Jalen Hurts in terms of like the usage, where you're going to use a lot of RPOs. Because last year, Jalen Hurts led the league in RPO passes with 122. Second place was like Marcus Mariota at 90. And then in 2021, Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts, they were like 1-2 in terms of RPO usage in 2021. So you're going to have to use a lot of that with Anthony Richardson. You're going to have to get extremely creative, because I'm not really too high on their receiving core. I do like Michael Pittman, but just based off, you know, again, like some of the stats that I had from their 2022 production, they were 20th in total receiving yards. You know, they're 24th in TD receptions. Granted, Matt Ryan to Sam Ellinger, Nick Foles. So it can get a little tricky.
Nick Foles took I memory hold the fact that he played for them until it came up an immaculate grid. I don't know if you ever played that game recently. I was like looking at it and I was like, wait, Nick Foles. Yeah. I forgot it was a Colts topic. Anyways, yeah, but that does kind of make it hard to evaluate the receivers, right?
Because right,
such bad quarterback play.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, I don't want to crush them. Like, I'm not in love with the receiving core, but I can't say like it's like the Texas receiving core where there's like legitimate questions based off like their own production, regardless of the quarterback. So I'm really interested to see just basically how Shane uses Anthony Richardson. I mean, and obviously they have to play on week one. Like, there's no point in letting Gardner Minshew play, in all honesty, because, you know, like, Gardner is fine. But when you take a guy like that who had 377 pass attempts in his entire, college career, think about it just for context. Like, Kyler Murray, his single year at OU, had 377, my bad. I meant to say Anthony Richardson had 339. And Kyler Murray in that one year had 377. So, like,
one season.
So, like, you have, like, he's going to need reps. Like, you know, with the, especially the quarterback position, it's a lot about reps. Just,
yeah.
It's, you know, people say, you know, sometimes some guys aren't ready. And I'm a pretty big proponent of, if the guy isn't ready to play and you take him that high, then maybe you shouldn't have taken him that high, you know?
I also think he should play. I'm with you. And I think it's because the NFL has changed. And we have coaches now who know what to do with these guys. And Shane Steichen, this is why everybody was so excited when Anthony Richardson landed with the Colts. Not because of the players around him, but because of Shane Steichen, honestly. Right. And because we just saw him do it. Now, granted, Jalen Hurts was more experienced than Richardson and more polished in a lot of ways. And the talent there is very different, which I'll get to in a second.
Yeah, very different.
But conceptually, everything you're saying in terms of like the quarterback run game, the RPOs, I think those are things that Steichen can lean into to make life easier for him early on in his NFL career. He's going to see easier coverages because of the threat he provides as a runner. And he's going to, I think, like, they'll probably use all four downs the way they did with Jalen Hurts. They should.
Yeah.
I mean, God, have you seen Anthony Richardson?
Yeah.
If that dude's not running sneaks, I don't know what. So, like, I think the question I would have for the Colts offense, there's two questions. One, okay, can Richardson's my big question about him was kind of the short accuracy. Can that improve? And it doesn't even have to. He never has to be, like, great in terms of accuracy because of what he brings as a runner and I think as his arm strength just needs to be better than he was in college. And then the other thing is, because again, and we're envisioning this offense with Jonathan Taylor and back there as well, because of what this team should be able to do on the ground, the wide receivers are going to see tons of one-on-ones.
Yeah.
Or when they use RPOs, they're going to be open a lot. Like, right. Linebackers are going to key on the run all the time. So when you look at Pittman, Pierce, who's a deep threat, who did they bring in the slot? Oh, they drafted Josh Downs, who I really like. And then Isaiah McKenzie, who's probably going to start. Can those guys take advantage of the fact that they're being paired? Because that's what makes the Eagles offense such an absolute damn nightmare. Because you have this insane running game and you have like one of the two best receiving duos in the NFL. And it's like, you know, you're going to die either way. I think with the Colts, if you're playing, like, you know, DJ, like, if you're playing the Colts, you'd be like, all right, stop the run.
Right.
Like, so my question for them, I guess I should also throw in the offensive line. Can they bounce back? But my other question for them is, can these skill players take advantage of what the run game is going to afford them? And I think that's going to go a large way towards determining what this offense looks like.
Yeah, I agree. I think Michael Pittman, he's a former 1,000-yard receiver. I think he can take advantage of that. We'll see what Alec looks like in year two out of Cincinnati. But because one-on-one, like, that's a receiver's dream, you know, getting a single coverage where, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, you cut for a slant or you cut for a dig, and you don't have to really necessarily worry about that linebacker kind of being in that area. Or, you know, you want to run like a double move and knowing – Anthony, you have to just run. Anthony Richardson can hit you no matter where you are because he has a rocket of an arm. So I think on paper, you know, obviously this year is going to have some clunks, but I think as time progresses, down the stretch, we should see some sparks of an explosive offense where they got the run game going and they can use some of that RPO, use some of that play action, and really push the ball down the field and get a lot of yards after the catch. I was a big Anthony Richardson fan, just in the sense that of what he can be. Obviously, I still had, CJ and Bryce ahead of Anthony Richardson, but I understood why you take a guy like that. Because if you're going to get fired for missing a quarterback, at least get fired swinging on a guy like that.
That's what they said. That's what Chris Ballard, literally exactly, he was like, look, go big, right? And this is a guy who was not big. I'm excited to watch it. I hope that, because they did run it back with the offensive line. I do think, one quick final note before we get to the defense, Anthony Richardson, and I mentioned this a lot during the draft process, that dude does not get sacked a lot.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's going to really help the offensive line. He had a really, really low pressure to sack ratio. When you watch him, he's just kind of like shakes dudes off
because
he's
literally
so big and strong. So I think that'll help. You're probably going to hold on to football a little bit longer. That'll make life harder. But I'm really excited to watch it. Defense, a little less excited.
Yeah.
I would sum it up this way. I think the defensive front is really good and really has a combination of like good veterans and exciting young players behind them.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I agree. I remember going when we were prepping for the show, I'm like, yeah, I know the defense isn't going to be that good. I mean, last year they were 28th in scoring defense, allowed 25 points per game. And obviously they had the nickel cornerback get suspended for the year. I was like, okay, but they still might have a little something. And I looked at Kenny Moore. Obviously, he was a Pro Bowl in 2021. Then I look at 2022. I'm like, quarterbacks targeted him. He allowed a passer rating of 110. I'm like, oh, Lord.
Not great.
I'm like, is that good?
Yeah.
Is that good? I do like Julius Brents that they got from Kansas State. When I watch him against TCU, he on the intermediate and short stuff, he kind of had his way with Johnston. But obviously, down the field is where Johnston was able to have some success. So, I see something there, but he's a rookie. Like I know what Sauce did as a rookie was special, but, that's so rare.
We can't just keep assuming these cornerbacks are going to come. But they're all starting. I mean, they might start another rookie opposite him. We'll see. Darius Rush.
Yeah, it's going to work in progress.
You mentioned Kenny Moore. Yeah, Kenny Moore was good. So, Julian Blackman was really, really good. I don't know if you remember early in his career. Then he's injured and stuff. You got Maniac Leonard coming back. But, he didn't play in a while. That injury is really weird. They have guys who have been good. It's just kind of, I don't know. The depth chart is just rough. I like the front a lot because I think some combination of either Kwity Paye, Ebukam, who they brought in, Dayo Odingbo, one of those dudes I feel like is going to step up. And on the inside, you got Grover Stewart. Of course, DeForest Buckner is one of the best DTs in the league.
Yeah.
I like the kid they drafted at Northwestern. I think I can really see this defensive front being good. It's just behind them. Sorry, I know I said that.
Yeah.
I'm repeating myself, but.
Yeah. It's the back end that gives a lot of people pause and concern. Because again, granted, they're in the AFC South and there's only one team, maybe two teams that have a prolific pass attack. So they might be able to get away with it sometimes. But then when they come across teams that can really air it out, they're going to face a lot of issues. And that's why, I think they're going to probably finish last in the division.
Real? Okay. Interesting. So yeah, I think I view this as the two-tier division. And I don't know what – probably Vegas has them above the Texans a little bit, but I bet it's pretty close.
Yeah,
all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's talk about the favorite that you hate after the break.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then Place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537, or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do. Big, small, and when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
Okay, we're back. Did you see the NFL 100 quarterback rankings? I mean, the list is out. The NFL 100 had Trevor Lawrence. So that's the players vote. And I don't know how exactly they do like a tabulation. You know, whatever. Every year, everybody gets mad about it. It's fine. I'm not gonna get mad about the NFL 100. But yo, they had Trevor Lawrence, I think, as like the 14th quarterback, which is behind the likes of Tua, Justin Fields, Jared Goff.
Right.
That is a massive. I must confess that I am part of the NFL media obsession with Trevor Lawrence. I did quarterback rankings on my pod, and I think I took him like 6 or something, like very high. Now, granted, that was with like a future timeline or whatever. I think he's so good, DJ. I'm such a fan of his game. So I guess we should start there. I mean, what he did in the second half of the season, I think it's so many things with him. It's and I just rewatched their playoff win against the Chargers. By the way, he was awful in the first half of that game. But the arm talent, how quickly he gets the ball out. He, like Anthony Richardson, doesn't get sacked, which is something I love. His underrated athleticism. I just think like that, you know, when we talk about the Jags and why they're the favorites, it all has to start. Well, you know, they're a very good coach too, but it all has to start with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, How did the Texans play him last year? I actually don't remember.
They believe it or not, like the Texans kind of have his number. Like he, like I was looking it up. I'm like, whoa, what's going on?
Wait,
like,
when did they play? When did they play? Like,
four games.
When were they?
They played him. So they played him week four or five. I think it had to be week four because I think that's when Damian Pierce had that crazy run.
Yeah.
And they were able to get the win, but he's 3 touchdowns, 6 interceptions against the Texans in his career, which is kind of interesting. So
did they hit him in the second half? What did they?
Yeah, no.
The second half.
So like in the second half, they saw him in the second half, but even that game he wasn't good.
Huh.
The run game was obviously they were flat on that.
Yeah.
But even that game, like he completed the majority of his passes, but he had like a pass rate under like 80 because he threw an interception. He threw no touchdowns that game. Like that, I was actually kind of mad about that game because I started Trevor Lawrence that week over Daniel Jones. Crazy. And I lost my fantasy football championship that week. So,
bitter. We got a bitter one.
Yeah.
All right.
But to overall answer your initial question, Trevor is phenomenal. Like, there's, for me, I have tiers of like elite, great, very good, good, and average. And obviously, like, I have Trevor in that great category. Elite, only have 3 guys there, Mahomes, Allen, and Burrow. But Trevor's obviously in that great category. He's probably going to, there's a chance he could end up in that elite category. Kind of just depends on how good Calvin looks when he gets back. But again, down that stretch, like, you know, from week 9 through the end of the season, well, the end of the regular season, like he was, I believe, 7th in passing yards, had a passer rating of 104.
Yeah.
Look at next gen stat score, which is basically, you know, how they just rank everything in the sense of, you know, EPA and passer rating and all these type of things and sack percentage. From week 9 through the rest of the season, he was 1st among all quarterbacks. Ahead of guys like Jared Goff, obviously Patrick Mahomes, ahead of guys like, you know, Josh Allen, things of that nature. So down that stretch, I have to give him his flowers. Like Trevor Lawrence was phenomenal. Yeah. And I mean,
he was balling the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think through why and the changes and what, you know, and I think there are definitely some tweaks they made. FTN just put out their almanac, the Aaron Schatz, which is I really recommend to people. I'll plug it more in the coming weeks. It used to be the Football Outsiders almanac, but Dan Pizzuto, who's been on the show, did the chapter on the Jags, so I read it and it was great. One thing he mentioned, and I made sure to take note of this because I thought it was so interesting, he actually pulled the numbers on this. Let me quickly get this out really quickly. Oh yeah, so after the bye, so basically the second half of the season, they really bumped up his 0 or 1 step drop snaps, attempts, passing attempts. And that ball was just, because the offensive line was not playing better. Let me tell you that. And we'll get to them. But he was just getting it out so quickly. So that was one change that they made. The other thing I feel like, another thing that really shows up in the data, and this was just, I was just looking at the splits. Outside the red zone, he actually was fine. He was really, really good. He was like top 10. He was like 10th or 11th both before and after. Mm-hmm. In the red zone, DJ, this is dramatic. The first half of the season, he had a QBR of 10, which was 31st. After, it was 82. So he just became an absolute assassin in the red zone. And I think that really contributed to his numbers. But it just kind of felt like watching them, like they figured, I tweeted some of this, they figured out how to use Evan Ingram, getting him the ball in space. It felt like, you know, this was not the greatest receiving group by any means, although Christian Kirk's probably underrated at this point. But it kind of felt like Peterson figured out how to get the most of Ingram, Kirk, Jones at times, the two Joneses. So, you know, what we saw was really exciting. And then now, as you mentioned, you throw Calvin Ridley into the mix. Like, what's your level of, I mean, you watched him along with me in 2018, 19, 20. How do you regard him as a player? And how much do you think he improves this already very good offense?
So, with Calvin Ridley, like, obviously, big fan of him. Obviously, he's from where I'm from South Florida. He plays exactly how a guy from South Florida plays. Cause you see some of how he plays in Jerry Jeudy a little bit too, where like we're like down south, we're big on separation.
Yeah,
like you're not gonna find too many big body receivers from South Florida. A lot of guys come out. We're big on separation.
Speed.
And that's probably my favorite trait about him. My only question with Calvin Ridley is like when week one starts, so that'd be September 10th. The last time he played football was October 27th, I think, 2021 against the Miami Dolphins, where he had like four catches for like 26 yards. So like it's only going to be, 23 whole months since he played in a regular season football game. But yeah, he's going to play in preseason, but we all know preseason is nothing compared to regular season in terms of speed, in terms of just coverages, like the coverages that you see post and pre-snap, things of that nature. And, you know, so basically having almost a 2-year layoff, like I was looking because it's so rare. You usually don't see that for receivers, you know. And, the only two guys that I could find that have similar layoffs was Plaxico Burress, who obviously went to prison for shooting himself accidentally. And you have Josh Gordon, who missed two seasons with substance abuse issues. So, like, both guys, you know, when they came back, they were solid when they came back, you know. And again, like, Practical was a lot older. He was like 34 when he came back with the Jets. But Josh was out in the middle of his prime, you know, and it wasn't like he wasn't working out. Like, he was in good shape. And he looked good. It's just that the numbers were just fine. So, like, that's where I'm like, okay, like, how much can we expect out of Ridley? But the reports seem good. You know, my dog, John Shipley, down in Jacksonville, he's raved about him. But again, like, I gotta kind of see.
It's a long layoff. Right. You're totally right to point that out. I mean, everyone is saying he looks great. Everybody's saying he looks like, you know, and he's really young too, which is worth mentioning. Right. I think what makes me so excited about Ridley is not just that he was like a legitimate number one receiver. And even, you know, he played with Julio Jones, obviously, for the bulk of that. But even when Julio Jones was out, he would still have big games. So it wasn't like he was entirely benefit on the spacing provided by Julio Jones. But I also think, DJ, his skill set, which you alluded to as being South Florida-ish, it pairs well with what Trevor Lawrence does well. You know, his ability to get open quickly, to separate in that intermediate area, work different parts of the field. One thing I grabbed this because I was curious. I'm just thinking about things I thought I remember Ridley being good at. So Trevor Lawrence is fantastic on out routes, which makes sense because of his arm strength and quick release, right? He actually finished second in EPA per target, only behind Mahomes last year. From 2018 through 2020, Matt Ryan had a passer rating of 140 throwing to Calvin Ridley on out routes. That's the best of any quarterback receiver pairing in the NFL. Can't you just see it? Can't you just imagine him just, you know, he's lined up outside, Trevor Lawrence, the ball's in his hand, just like he separates quickly, first down. Like it works in my mind.
Yeah, no, I don't know. You know, my question is, I'm not saying that Ridley is going to not be productive. I think he's absolutely going to be productive. Again, the skill set it's going to be hard. Like, you can't replicate his skill set in the sense of being able to separate, get in and out of his breaks. Obviously, he has good hands, and he's explosive after the catch. And he's not one of those guys that's going to run into traffic. He's going to get down and preserve his body. We've seen plenty of clips of that. And you mentioned that with Matt Ryan, who didn't necessarily have, down that stretch of his career, didn't have necessarily a strong arm. But that just shows how much separation and how well Ridley was able to win at the top of that route on those out routes to be able to, because, you know, he was obviously selling it well enough to, when he cut, he had enough separation for Matt Ryan to get the ball down. When you pair Calvin Ridley and Trevor Lawrence's arm strength, quick release, and to that, they can for sure make magic.
It's pretty exciting. What do you have any concerns about this offense? I guess the offensive line, right?
Nah. Yeah, the offensive line. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, Cam Robinson is going to be out 6 games.
Yes.
He's going to replace him, and then the right tackle is going to be the first-round pick out of Oklahoma, who played mainly left tackle at Oklahoma. So I'm really curious to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
So we all know tackles, bad tackles can get your quarterback killed. So I'm really interested to see what that looks like early on, because I believe the first 6 weeks of the season, like, they don't face crazy pass rushes, but they do face some pass rushes that can give you some issues, right? Because, like, when I pulled up their schedule, I know they had the, they open up with – it's the Colts, correct? They open the Colts, then they go to – they play Kansas City. And Kansas City, like, if George takes another step all coming off the edge, and obviously they get the Chris Jones situation taken care of, like, that could cause some issues. And then week three, my boy Will coming off that edge – that could, and Gennard, because Gennard in 2021 had 8 sacks in 21 games.
Yeah.
And he's really, like, he's a good pass rusher when healthy. So, like, that could be a potential issue. And I believe, I'm not off the top of my head, I don't remember who they played week four, but I know they got the Buffalo Bills in that stretch. What kind of saves them a little bit is the fact they get the Colts twice in that six week stretch. I'm not really too sure how good their pass rush from the edges is going to be.
Edges, yeah.
I think interior to be fine. Yeah, I think interior to be fine. But I don't necessarily have too many concerns overall about the offense. For me, my concerns and why I am going with the Titans to win the division is mainly because a lot of, you know, in 2022, they spent the most money in free agency, and most teams that spend a lot of money, right, they usually reap the benefits that first year, then they pull back a little bit, right? The Giants in 2016, they went 11-5, then the next year, they weren't really that good. Obviously, everybody got fired. They went 3-13 that year. Actually, the Jags, they spent a bunch of money with the NFC Championship game, 5-11 the next year. Bears, they spent a bunch of money. Wild card loss, went 12-4. Then the following year, 8-8, missed the playoffs. Dolphins, 2022, 10-6. Barely missed the playoffs. That week 17 game, that still hurts me as a Dolphins fan, where they all of them forgot how to play football. Then the next year, 9-8, missed the playoffs. So there's a trend, right? Patriots, same thing.
That's your main concern about the Jags.
Right.
I thought you were going to say the defense. I thought you were going to say you're skeptical of the defense.
Not the,
because I was about to agree. I share some skepticism.
Yeah, I have some skepticism of the defense, but it's not that large. My biggest concern for them necessarily is the fact that they had a fourth place schedule last year. And now this year, they're going to play the Niners, the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to throw it in there, the Texans. Grant, I know people are going, the Texans? Oh, my God, the Texans. But hear me out. Everybody, hear me out. If you're in the car, don't crash. Because I said that. But the Texans have really dominated the Jags over the last. Yeah, like you know, they beat them last year, obviously. And then, you know, they had at one point, they won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games in a row against the Jags. Granted, you know, they have Trevor. So Trevor changes the entire landscape of everything that I said, right? But again, Bills at New Orleans, at Pittsburgh, San Francisco 49ers, Cincinnati Bengals.
The Cleveland Browns should be better. It's harder.
Baltimore Ravens and the Tennessee Titans.
They have to be better. They have to be the version of the team we saw in the second half of the season. And, you know, the offense was, I think we agree, pretty lights out in the second half of the season. The defense improved. Now, they still finished 30th in pass DVOA, and there's still problems, I think, with this roster. But, you know, what jumped out to me watching them play the Chargers in the comeback, I was just trying to, like, I was like, what happened? Like, that was so weird. a lot of guys on the defense played really well. I think that their the interior of the front is pretty stout with Robertson Harris, Devon Hamilton. They get Fadukasi, who's been injured, back. They re-signed Dwayne Smoot, who was hurt. Those are all good players. I think where I get, and then I'll talk about the secondary in a second. I like the corners, safeties less so. Where I get concerned, though, is pass rush, because Arden Key is no longer on this team. And outside of Josh Allen, who I think is quite good, it's kind of a question mark. Like, Trevon Walker, I guess let me say this. I'm going to make like a statement, I guess. For this defense to be better than they were last year in pass defense, and they were one of the worst units in the league, Trevon Walker has to play like a number one pick. He's got to just play like a top 10 pick, man, because he was really inconsistent. Now, some of that might have had to do with how he was used. You know, he was standing up a lot, which I know people think is not his best usage. You want him with his hand in the dirt. he's in coverage sometimes. Maybe he's better off lined up inside. I don't know. He came into the NFL as like a quote-unquote raw prospect, I guess. But he's got to be better, not just because of, I'm not saying because of his draft status, but because I don't, like, that's where the pass rush has to come from. Like, when you look at opposite Josh Allen and the other guys on this team, they need another dude. He has to be that dude, in my opinion, for this defense to be good.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Again, like, you made a great point, right? You take that guy number one overall, you kind of need, like, him to truly play like a guy that can, you know, even take in the top 10. Because, like, I know it's more the rushing the passes than sacks, but you take a guy number one overall, like, he got to be able to get more than 3.5 sacks, even as a rookie. Like,
Grant, it wasn't like he was getting a lot of pressures either, DJ. He wasn't one of those guys where you're like, oh, he was so close. Like, he wasn't really that close.
Yeah. I remember, you know, he was coming out. Like, I had a coach tell me, like, he's basically like a workout warrior. Like, I wouldn't draft him if I was drafting that high. Like, I wouldn't draft him that high over guys like, you know, Kayvon or Hutch, you know, so. You know, you kind of bet. I had another guy tell me, you know, he has the most upside out of that group, and you're hoping that he can tap into that. But pass rushing, being able to get sacks and pressures is a skill. Like, that's not necessarily – that's something that – I don't want to say either you have it or you don't. But if you didn't have it in college, it's really hard to get it in the NFL for the most part. I had my guy, again, shout out to him again, John Shipley. He mentioned that – he looked better in camp. He went on radio show. He mentioned that he looked better in camp. But he also, again, pointed out your concerns, too, of outside of those two guys, they don't have much coming after the pass rusher. He's like, that's a tough bet to bet on two guys come off the edge and stay healthy for an entire year for 17-game season to stay healthy and be your predominantly main pass rush duo. Because, again, if one guy gets hurt, now you can slide all your protection to that other guy. Side, hit to give him a whole bunch of double team things of that nature. Because I mean, you know, right. Because like, Josh is he's good, but there's only like a few guys that you can double team all game and they can still make an impact. The McDonald's of the world, the Nick Bosa's. And I don't know if we could put Josh in that category yet. Maybe he can develop into that, but he's not in that category yet. So, yeah, that's a great concern. So, you know, I think. Because, again, you know, the pass defense, you mentioned, you know, 31st in DVOA. Hopefully it can get better in 2023. But it's going to come down to that pass rush.
Yeah, and I think the secondary, you know, I like the corners. I think once when Griffin got hurt, maybe Williams outside, him and Campbell are, you know, both flashed a lot of upside. Safeties I'm a little bit less high on. But, you know... If this team wants to vie with the Chiefs, Bills, and Bengals of the world, and I think that's, I think the offense is totally capable of it. I just think that it you never want to put it all on like one player, but like somebody other than Josh Allen has to get to the quarterback, and you know we'll see what happens. They got a lot of young linebackers. See what happens with them too. There's a lot of young players on this defense that like. Are in their second year or third year and kind of need to take a leap for me to feel better about them.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's talk about the Titans. Let's finish with the Titans. You got the Titans winning the division. Let's just start big picture. Why do you like the Titans? Like, why do you think – what is it about them that you feel is going to carry them to success this year?
Well, I really love the Hop pickup, mainly because I still think Hop is the number one. Like, from week 7 through week 15, he had 713 yards, which was fourth in the entire NFL. I know people want to throw out the jokes like, oh, you know, he's like every other, you know, star receiver that's going to Tennessee to end their career, like Randy or Andre Johnson or even Julio. But those guys were all clear declines.
Yeah.
Like, very clear declines. Where Hop is still a very viable receiver. Like 713 yards in 9 games is kind of bananas. If you extract that for an entire season, that's 1,300 yards, you know? So I think because Tannehill, if you give him weapons on the outside, because now that you have Hop, now you can put Treylon Burks in his Z spot because, you know, he's a guy that you want to motion around and get him free releases because that's what he did a lot in Baylor.
Agree.
And that's what he's able to be productive.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I said Baylor.
No, Arkansas. But you're right. That is what he did. Yeah, you want to move. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you can move him around and get him the ball. Because he is a playmaker when he gets the ball in his hands.
Yes.
And that gives him time to develop as a route runner because, you know, again, at Arkansas, not Baylor, he was okay as a route runner. And again, like he flashed a little bit last year, but now that you can have Hop, where Hop is going to get the bulk of the defensive coordinator's attention in terms of stopping, yeah, in terms of the pass game, now Treylon can, you know, find those open seams and things like that. You can get him on some crossing routes, get him ball in space so he can make some big plays. So that's what really gives me more confidence. And obviously, you have Derrick Henry. I talked to my dog, T, the ESPN reporter, Teron, from the Titans. He said the left side of the line is rock solid. Like he said, like that, it's good. You know, obviously, the guard that they drafted, Peter, he looks good. What gives me a little bit concerned, my dog was like, but the right side, the right tackle spot.
I don't know who's playing right tackle. I'll put my hand up. Because even their situation before, Petit Frere is the dude who's a second-year player. He got suspended for the gambling stuff, right. six games.
Right.
He wasn't good. So it wasn't like I was like, oh, man, you know, this is going to be great. Now it's like, I'm reading Jamarco Jones getting cut for fighting too much. There's like rookies in the mix. I'll be straight up. Like, I think this offensive line is really bad. I like Skronsky pick. Maybe I'm being unduly influenced because I saw that the aforementioned Arden Key apparently sacked Tannehill 7 times running through Andre Dillard. And the defensive line is amazing. So it's an unfair fight.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
It's just, and I think that's going to be the big question is how much will they hold them back? Because everything you said about Hopkins and Burks, I could not agree more. And it's funny because I think Hopkins is like now, to me, he's kind of like a 1A, to be honest, where like I wouldn't put him in that top, but I do. He's not washed at all. He is not Julio coming.
No,
he is still a really good player. And when they added him, I was like, oh, man. Suddenly everyone kind of slots into a different position and it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I love their tight end, mm-hmm, Chika Kwankwo, who's really, really good with the ball in his hands too. I know, you know, like you mentioned Hopkins, Burks, then you're looking at Kyle Phillips, Westbrook, Akine. Suddenly it's a totally decent group. And you got a new play caller in Tim Kelly, who was in Houston. Offense, I think, is going to look a little bit different. I can see it all, but like, I'm like, damn, this offensive line might be so bad that it undermines. I'm not optimistic about it. And I'd love to be wrong because, I like Tannehill. I like the skill players.
Yeah.
I'm just nervous. I just keep looking at this depth chart. I've been reading all the camp reports trying to figure out who's starting and like it's a tough scene. I think something that got a bit of attention last year, this is a team that runs the ball a lot and that makes things easier in the pass game. They were very bad at a running ball, especially on early downs. I don't have to get into all that, but you know, maybe hopefully with Tim Kelly, from what I understand, you might know a little bit more about him than I do. But from, you know, I do remember that one season. And then from what I'm reading from Titans camp, a little bit more balls are coming out quickly, quick passing game. I think they have the personnel for it and it would be good if they weren't, you know, constantly running into brick walls on first down. So I think that could be a good change as well. So.
I completely agree there. Obviously, yeah, that's all like I'm saying I got the winning division, but it's like the only thing, again, as you mentioned, holding me back is that offensive line, because we all know like because the Jags are still a good team, like even though I have the Titans winning, but for you to win a division, we have another good team there, like your O-line can't be an abomination. So that's where I'm like my only concern, I've talked about it in my group chat with some of my friends, almost my reporter friends, and like that's been my only holdup. But me and my dog, Mike Dugard from Seattle, you know, from the Athletic, covering Seahawks, we're on the Titans bandwagon
this year.
But yeah, we're on the Titans bandwagon. We're going to ride it out, you know. But for me, it's defensively, you know, I think the defense can also be really good.
Yeah, so let's talk about the defense. Titans fans, yeah. if you were mad at me for being doom and gloom about the offensive line, I actually think I might be more optimistic about the defense than the consensus. And that's why I said it's a two-tier thing, really, honestly. It's because mm-hmm. I think this defense rules. I mean, the fact that they were so good not they weren't good last year, but that they gave they just constantly like dragged teams into hell. And
yeah.
And they were the best run defense in the NFL, despite the fact that they had one of the highest light box rates in the league, which speaks to just how fearsome that defensive line was. Struggled against the pass, lots of injuries. You get Landry back. I talked about Key, who I think is an extremely good player. I think, you know, with better health on the back end, I think I personally I view them as the best defense in the division.
Yeah, no, easily. I mean, again, you mentioned like the defense putting the offenses in hell. Like they almost won a game against the Kansas City Chiefs strictly off of defense alone. Yeah. Like this defense is for real. Yeah, like again, obviously the pass defense, it was dead last in terms of yards, passing yards per game, and the cornerback situation was kind of shaky, especially with Roger. He struggled a lot as a rookie. I believe quarterbacks had a passer rating over 100 when they targeted him. It was rough, but I think hopefully he can get better. I really like Fulton.
I'm still a Fulton believer. I'm glad you say that. Yeah, me too. He has ups and downs. He's had injuries, but I think he's a good player. I really do.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. I mean, when he, you know, they brought in Sean Bunting, Bunting.
Murphy Bunting, yeah, but from Tampa. That was kind of one of those quiet, kind of flew under the radar. Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then you look up and you're like, he's competent.
Yeah, exactly. So, and obviously, Bird is phenomenal. Like, yeah. Right. There ain't really much more to say about that. Last year, they were third and third down defense.
That's crazy. And then
That's
crazy that they were that good with the injuries that they had.
And that's why I'm like, they were going to win the division last year if Ryan Tannehill stayed healthy. Like, they were going to win that division. They almost stole that last game with Joshua Dobbs until he threw that, I think it was a pick six or he fumbled, one of the two. But they took the score back, and that was basically the game in that instance. I think they would have won a division if Malik Willis was even remotely competent. Like, Malik, when he really wasn't ready, like, there was, for example, like, when they played the Texans, his first ever start, so there was one concept that every single team used against the Texans, mainly because on certain downs, basically first downs, the linebackers are always going to crash in, because, again, they had to, because they knew that, you know, Lovie knew that, hey, my linebackers and my D-line, it's shaky. So that every team, usually at one point in the game, we're going to run a glance concept where you're going to have, but it's in tight, you know, single back tight, whatever, and then have, you know, that glance, we have the backside post, dig, whatever. Everybody ran it. I've seen the Chargers run it, the Raiders run it, Colts run it. I saw everybody run it, right? And then, you know, because it's wide open. You just got to hand it, you know, down, say, hut, boom. Basically, you know, it's going to be wide open. Malik ran that, and it ended up in an interception, you know, that Steven Nelson took back to like a 3-yard line. I don't know if they scored or not. I don't think they scored. Shows how bad the offense was. But I think they kicked a field goal. But like, that just showed me the Titans just had below average quarterback play. They won the division because again, like, Mike Vrabel is a really, really good coach. Like, last year was his first losing season. I'm going to bet on Mike Vrabel. That defense, top with Tannehill, Henry, Burks, that they can find a way to get to 10 wins and win that division.
I think what I appreciated so much about the Hopkins signing was, because we could have come into this preview and we could have started with when is Levis going to start? Is Malik Willis, he's having a good camp. Is he going to challenge him? How long are they? But when they signed Hopkins, it was like, okay, they're trying to win. Like, Tannehill's going to be, Tannehill might get hurt, obviously, but it really clarified like that they still want to win, however you feel about that, and whether or not you think a team should acknowledge where they are. And I think, you know, they made their intentions clear. And I think, I don't think it's delusional. Like, I do think, as we've been discussing this, I still have the Jags as my favorite in the division. But there's a universe in which this does work out, because the passing game under Tim Kelly looks better. We like this group of receivers. You know, Tannehill's healthy, fully healthy for the season. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about the offensive line. This is the best defense in the division. It's a really good pass rush. They get Harold Landry back. We didn't even mention, and Key, mm-hmm. and some of the young DBs are healthy, and they play. Like, it's not crazy. And cap it all off, as you said, they've got a really, really, really good coach who's really, really good at coaching against good football teams. So, you know, shout out to the Titans for trying. They didn't have to try.
That's 110% correct. And I'll throw this last stat out there. Even though I know quarterback wins isn't a stat that we all believe in.
But come on my podcast. All right.
But all I'm saying is, with Ryan Tannehill, the least amount of wins outside of, I believe, the 2018 year where he missed like five games with like a bum shoulder. The least amount of wins he's ever had is six. So that's his floor. His floor is six wins. No matter what's around him, no matter – you mentioned the offensive line. I remember in 2013, he got sacked over 50 times. They won eight games. You know what I'm saying? They won. They found a way to win. The Dolphins found a way to win eight games. So.
I do think wins are a coaching stat. And I –
yeah.
It's funny. I said the defense drags teams to hell. That's how I feel about Vrabel. Like, that dude – and we should have seen it coming, because he was never going to accept a rebuild. Like –
No way.
So he is scary. All right. Well, you got the Titans on the top. I got the Jags on top. Very excited, however, to watch the two young quarterbacks as well. They're going to make the preseason exciting. Everybody, you should to follow everything that's going on with CJ Stroud in particular. Check out DJ Bieniemy on Bieniemy on Twitter. I said it, Eric Bieniemy. I put that in my head. I was like, it's not pronounced like Eric Bieniemy, and then of course immediately I just said Eric.
It's all good.
Bien-Aimé on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us. This was really fun.
Thank you for having me. I know a lot of my friends are going to be like, oh my God, you want to meet a cotton show. So
Jags fans, find him on Twitter. Flame him. No, I love those guys. All right. Talk to you soon.